Welcome to Inaudible. I'm your host, Jeremy Weiland. On this podcast, we discuss the weird, beautiful channeled messages found in the long tradition of contact with the Confederation of Planets in service to the One Infinite Creator. These messages articulate a philosophy of spiritual evolution, popularly known as the Law of One. Many of these messages are available to listen to on our sister podcast, Living Love and Light, available on all platforms. We seek to provide analysis and commentary on this philosophy described in these messages, identifying the common themes and grappling with the application of these messages to our human lives. However, we are not counselors, gurus, or experts of any kind, so please evaluate our words in light of our shortcomings and use your own best judgment. Thanks for listening, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the podcast once more, Steve Timon. Steve, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thank you.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. We're going to pick directly up from what we discussed in the last episode on the archetypes. I believe we left off with the Significator. And one of the things that one of the reasons we're coming back to the Significator is that it has a lot of bearing on how the last two stations of this cycle, the Transformation Station and the Great Way Station, apply to mind, body, and eventually spirit. But we're going to get to spirit in another episode. In this episode, we're going to be trying to get clear on what Transformation and Great Way mean for mind and body. So, starting with the Significators, Ra says that the introduction of the veil between the conscious and unconscious creates a complex out of the Significator, where before it was, I guess, maybe a little bit more of a coherent and unified concept. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
Ra also says that at all points, the Significator represents the nature of either mind or body, depending on what you're talking about, the intrinsic nature of that. And to the extent that that nature was not complex, it was kind of unproblematically merely the centering consideration of the various factors that fed into it. In the original group of archetypes, Ra said that there were nine, and that involved the matrix potentiator and significator times three. Now, at that point already, the division between mind, body, and spirit had been established, but they were not a complex. In other words, it was a function, a unified, integrated function, in which those were three facets. So when the veil dropped, Ra says it becomes a complex. So the question is, what does that mean? Well, minimally, it means that each is an independent variable. And in order for each to become an independent variable, it would have to suggest that the Significator function itself is broken into a kind of fragmentation, so that the integration takes place on different levels and in different ways, without being centrally dominated by any one point or any one function. So there are now three functions operating in some way independently of one another. Now that independence is not intended to persist, but the significance of suggesting that the function of free will is augmented when you make of the Significator a complex is that the integration, the whole structure of the integration, becomes a product of the free will of the individual mind-body-spirit complex. And so that means that you have now a lot of balls in the air, and the significance of each facet or moment of the process is not given beforehand, but is acquired through the free will of the mind-body-spirit complex. And that happens as a function of not just the choice itself, but the way the choice is seated within the overall beingness of the entity. And so that's a terribly nuanced state of affairs at this point.
Do you think that it, then maybe this is a dumb question, I can cut it out if it is, but do you think that it was that when the veil dropped, there was some sort of intentionality to that architectural decision, I would think. And do you think that they intended to make these archetypes more into complexes?
Yes, I think that's what Ross suggests, that precisely that was true, that the contemplation on the part of the Logoi was devoted to how the significator could become more articulate so that it would represent the workings of free will all the way down to the core, involving the coloration of all the facets that were being developed. Now, these facets came into focus. Ross said that originally they were the ones that hadn't already been sedimented into actual archetypes were shadows, partial concepts or intimations of concept that hadn't yet been fully developed. And it was through working with the way the significator would become a complex that these facets were then further conceived. And I think the first elements that were sedimented into archetypes were catalyst and experience, but then the next ones after that were the transformation and the great way. So those archetypes become available after the significator has become complex, and free will begins to function as a process involving the choice. Now, the choice hadn't really been fully appreciated until the possibility of service to self emerged into view. And that did not happen until the veil was dropped. But the fact that the veil was dropped in the first place, therefore, had to have been undertaken without a realization that it would yield the result that service to self would become a possibility. So the intention was to heighten the effect of free will. The notion of the choice was already there, but not in such a way that there was a recognition that it would be a choice between two fundamental alternatives.
Well, I also think there's another interesting thing that you just brought to mind, given that there's the shadows or facets of all of these things implicit in every octave, I would suppose, with this sort of like template that's introduced by the Logoi increasing its articulation and expression. So the question is that like, in this increasing articulation, what it seems like we're used to in the progression of octaves, and maybe I'm speculating here, is that each of these archetypes kind of get broken down, right? Like we started out with like three sets of three, I think. And then it would seem that like we'd start finding more facets out inside of these different archetypes. Now with the choice, we have a different thing. It's like a new master level of the hierarchy being articulated from out of the significators of mind, body, and spirit. You know what I mean? Like, yes. it's not a subset of those significators. It tends to be this superset almost. Maybe that's the wrong word.
Well, this is so many questions really drives us back to the original issue of what an archetype is. And you can be studying archetypes for a very long time and still have things to learn about that question. I suspect that there was a time when there wasn't even the articulation of individuated foci of free will into mind, body, spirit.
Right.
So that articulation had to have happened. So that's almost a kind of original foray into the world of archetypes that then becomes cemented, and then further archetypal sediments are laid down on top of that. So at some point, the matrix potentiator significator structure is seen to be less developed than it needs to be, or it would do well for it to be. And then as these further archetypes come into view, what do they add to the equation? Right. Well, they add two things, really. One, an input of energy from a different source, and two, a resting place for the movement of the mind-body-spirit complex as it goes around, attempting to find its way back to the Creator ultimately. Because that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with this great drama of exile and return. Exile from the Creator and return to the Creator. The more points of, or stations, you could say, of articulated input into that process and resting points within that process, it gives you a way of discovering the potentials of being differentiated from the one in unique ways.
Yeah, it seems like there's a need for a stable resonance at each of these points.
Yes, and it's a question also of stability. That's absolutely true. And so when the significator becomes complex, there's a discovery that happens. And that is that the individuated mind-body-spirit complex can choose not simply to polarize in the way that always had been done up to that point, which is toward the positive. Now, there was the element of the negative. The negative has been part of the creation all along. It's electromagnetic. There's a positive and a negative pole there working.
And I think Kuo has said something through our group about how that negativity was implicit in the fact that it was so hard to get out of third density because there was such a desire to just linger and never extend oneself. Yeah.
And so it's been a component of individuation all along. So you had polarity and the homogeneous view of the creation that persisted prior to the extension of free will down into the significator so as to make it complex. Prior to that happening, the process of development was unidirectional. Mm-hmm. You use the negative to fuel the positive.
Right.
And evolution took place in this singular way, that is, moving toward the positive ever and ever up through the higher planes and up through the densities. Once the significator becomes complex and the veil is in place between the conscious and the unconscious mind, the awareness of the unity of the entirety of the creation gets obscured. And when that is obscured, the, as Ra puts it, the mind-body-spirit complex has the opportunity to become what it was not. And as part of that opportunity, there's a discovery made. One of the things that it can become is by becoming that which it was not, by embracing that which is not. And that's what the dark side is. It embraces that which is not. If you see light as being a sudden intrusion into the darkness, illuminating the darkness, that the darkness isn't the darkness by way of being the darkness. The darkness only is shown to be the darkness as the light illuminates it. And so it hadn't occurred to anyone that one might embrace the darkness for its own sake, which is what service to self does. To embrace that dark moment within the self. Once that becomes seen to be a possibility, free will now is perched on the precipice. You may choose that, or you may choose the light. But then choosing the light has a significance that it did not have before. It wasn't just evolving back to the Creator along the path that is given. It's evolving back to the Creator along a path that is chosen. And that's the significance of that enlargement of free will at that moment.
That will in its freedom has like a deeper meaning in that.
It has a deeper reach into the nature of the creation.
And it seems like in finding this facet of the Creator that we've called the choice that transcends mind, body, and spirit, that seems to imply that what was discovered is of paramount importance. Like it transcends the earlier articulations.
It becomes the pivot of the entire creation once it's discovered.
Yeah. Because you would think that the choice would be like a spirit thing. That's how I would normally approach it. But it's weird to think of the choices also applying to the body until you think more broadly about the body and like your ability to be at a moment in space and time as an actor with free will, right?
Well, that's right. It ultimately is a spiritual choice.
Yeah.
Insofar as the spirit ultimately mediates between mind and body. But it works so much in the element of the hidden that it's very hard to articulate that.
Yeah, you don't want to like nail it down to one complex or the other. You want it to sort of float free. And I think that has a lot to do with, I just think this is interesting. And I'd like to put I'd like to stress it for the listener that what seems to be happening in the evolution of the archetypal mind across octaves is that we find these different stable points of consciousness to resonate with the octave, using that to discover new aspects that are not articulated. And there's something about the recognition of creativity and free will that comes from this sort of templating of consciousness at the outset of the logoic experiment. I guess I don't really have a point there, but that's an interesting way to think about what free will means at the cosmic level, I guess is what
I'm saying. Yes, I presume it was beyond imagination what the nature of choice could become before that discovery was made. And who knows what the next creation will bring
right.
is beyond imagination for us now. But
well, the way that I tend to think about it, Steve, is that what we are experiencing in time right now is that act of imagination. It's just that we are partaking of this very, very small slice of it.
That's right. That's yeah. absolutely right. And so after the choice is made, or after the choice begins to be laid down as something made, then it's possible to embark on the next archetype, which is the transformation. And we're then speaking of transformation of mind and body. And remember, the same kind of circumstance obtains here as obtained with the other archetypes that we've already treated, namely that the body is kind of a mirror in opposite of the mind. So if you gaze at the card, the representation of the transformation of mind, you have the so-called two lovers. Two paths or two lovers, and the reason that I wanted to begin with a significator is that you have that figure represented in the middle that holds the hand both of the positive path and the negative. The negative is called a prostituted entity, and the positive is courted as you would court the subconscious mind, as if it were a maiden, protracted and carefully with honor. I take it that standing between those two is now the significant self, that has made the choice. So you now, how does that old song go? You have to choose one and leave the other behind. To choose the positive is to not have chosen the negative. And that carries with it a host of implications. And so, when you make that choice, it's not simply that you say, okay, this is my path, I'm walking along this in a carefree manner forevermore. It reflects backwards upon all the other archetypes, which now have to be brought into line with the choice that you've made. And so the transformation doesn't happen instantaneously. It takes place over time. And generally in stages, if you will, which could be called initiations. Remember how Ra describes those initiations as a leaving behind of distortions? And so there are a lot of distortion leavings that take place as a process of undergoing this transformation. And they're never comfortable. And one of the characteristics of a transformation is that it tends to change the significance of what has gone before, and it creates in the being of the seeker something new, so new, that it could not have anticipated what that newness is prior to undergoing the transformation. And it's the choice itself which fuels the potentials that are now experienced as new. So, having chosen, let us say for the sake of argument, that we choose the way of service to others, that already puts in a new light our entire past. And we have to undergo this whole process of review of what that path has led us to, how that plays out with regard to what we take as our personality, what we accept as the personality we are willing to work within going forward. And that opens us up to new possibilities, often experienced as the way we relate to others going forward. So we become a new self. Now, that the newness of that self is laid down as a possibility within the parameters of mind, but is experienced as it's mirrored back to us in the transformation of body. And here you see the image of the Grim Reaper,
right,
which is kind of frightening just to look at it. Here's the quote that accompanies this. Each moment, each day offers death and rebirth to one attempting to reap the catalyst offered. What comes to mind is this notion of ego death, which is such a riveting experience when you undergo it. The self that I feel myself to be is constantly put at risk when I confess that I am undergoing transformation. The catalyst I get back from interacting with other cells is that somehow the self that I have become comfortable with is no longer working and has to be left aside. Once again, I would suggest that this tends to happen not instantaneously or smoothly, but it tends to happen in increments, sometimes very dramatically. And so I come up to a point where I suddenly realize that I have not been conducting myself in relation to the others that I use as mirrors in a way that reflects back to me the self that I am in the process of choosing to be. And that's always in a very arresting moment, and it can throw me back upon myself in a way that is almost devastating. And it requires that I kind of withdraw into the self and reflect on the qualities of selfhood that I have learned to live with and lean back into, and that I no longer find workable. And so there's a kind of moment that is a vague anticipation of that which will come later, which is the dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. Because I've lost my moorings. And when you lose your moorings, you're very vulnerable. And you're kind of out there, and the changes that you are undergoing are happening to you rather than being something which you are specifically choosing moment by moment. And so the choice having been made, you now find that the transformation that you need to undergo is more or less made for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an experience of the new, and that's why it's so unsettling and disorienting. So, but both at the level of mind and body, the transformation is a really unsettling experience.
I don't think I've ever noticed exactly the character of reflection between the mind and body transformation images. In the transformation of mind, I think you have the starkest reflection of the choice, right? Like, there's no other archetype other than the choice itself that seems to reflect this need to go one way or another. And then one of these, with the idea that Ra talks about in session 100, that one of these maidens, one of these ways of conceiving of the deep resources of the unconscious mind must be abandoned. It's not simply choose making a positive choice. It's also affirmatively saying that is not what I choose. And then in the body transformation archetype, you have the fruits of that in a way, right?
You do have the fruits of that. And the difference there is that when you first make the choice in mind, it can feel so exhilarating. It can feel like it hits you like a bolt of lightning. I get it. I see it now. It's all about love. Love is all you need. And so it's like when you first fall in love with someone. Everything is of heightened brilliance. There's nothing about your day that you don't like.
You're focused only on the potential that will be released. Yeah.
There's nothing about your love that you're not in love with.
Yeah.
And then the mirroring effect starts to kick in, and sometimes sooner, sometimes later. Your beloved begins to mirror you back to yourself, and in ways that you were unprepared for, and in ways that you now have to integrate with the fact that you are, after all, a lover of the path of service to others. And you find that self that you thought you were bringing into this newfound relationship is no longer, cannot be sustained if the relationship is to be what you've taken it to be. And so that's where the initiations come in. There are a lot of distortion leavings that have to happen, and those are uncomfortable. And so I don't know how many initiations there are. I doubt that there's a set number, but when one is going through an initiation, one is leaving an old structure of selfhood behind and taking on a new one in a way that one doesn't even know what it means to take on this new self at that point. And that's why it is so unsettling.
The thing that comes to mind, especially with transformation of mind, is the model of the spiral, right? So we tend to go in this circle, right, of going through these different states of life. And then it seems to me like what the transformation does is it introduces this Z axis in which that spiral levels up, so that it's kind of like what the Confederation often says, that yes, you do go in cycles, but you're also a different self each time that you round that station of the cycle, right? And the transformation seems to represent that liminal space between these two planes.
Yes. One can say that when one's adopting the overview or after one's undergone some of these transformations, but you can't say that when it's happening, man. It's a very difficult moment.
You are in free fall in the transformation.
At that moment, that's right.
Yeah, and only later do you make sense of it, yeah.
That's a good segue into the next archetype then, because the next archetype is the way or the path or the great way, as it's sometimes called, wherein One now has an overview of the whole process of working the self through all of the archetypal arrays. And so it becomes like a tone poem at that moment. And so one has all of these archetypal moments, one could call them, in the movements of the mind-body-spirit complex through the incarnate experience. And at that moment, one can see that the pivotal moment was indeed contained in the signifier, as the signifier resolved to orient itself to the choice. So the signifier is always paired with the choice. The significator is always paired with the choice. But the overview of the whole array doesn't come into view until one has passed through the transformation sufficiently so that one recognizes the transformation as transformation. So the first transformation is one undergoes. Will be so disorienting that one can't even register it as what it is, a transformation. It's just, I like to liken that to adolescence, for example. Adolescence is the first big transformation we have, where we have to leave childhood behind and we're entering into adulthood. We don't know, when we're children, one doesn't have a full concept of what it means to be immature, because maturity hasn't become an issue yet. As when it starts to mature and hormones kick in and we now have to take a different relation to the world, one where more responsibility is involved, we are moving into a sense of who we are that we've never had before. And we already are neck deep in this new sense of self, with all of its implications and responsibilities, before we even register that we've undergone a transformation. The full use of the archetype of the transformation doesn't become possible until we've already undergone many of them, typically. And at the point that happens and that we begin to recognize that there is, after all, a structure here, and we begin to make more use of that structure, make more use of that archetype, laying down what it means now to have chosen the path of seeking that we have done. We have chosen service to others. Service to others, if it's just the way that everybody already goes once they reach a certain level, will not have been explicitly chosen in the way that it is now chosen with this complex of the significator. And when that does happen, there's more consciousness in the transformation, because one uses the template of service to others to evaluate all of our previous modalities of selfhood as they play into my present modality of selfhood and the modality of selfhood that I am presently projecting as my future modality. And that's all work that is in the process of being done. And once I grasp that point, I am already standing in the midst of the great way of mind and body, because I am taking the substantial overview of the entire process that I've been going through, and I'm to the point now where I begin to have the capacity to work all of the various elements of that process. And that very frequently involves going back to the beginning And so if you want to look at this from the standpoint of the energy centers, I go back to red ray, I go back to orange ray, I go back to yellow ray, and do all of the, redo all of this work that has already, to some extent, in one way or another, been done to get me to the point where I could consciously reflect on the significance of work done in this area. And at that point, I am rearranging the way all of these energies fit together. I'm rearranging each energy center on its own, and I'm arranging all of the energy centers and all of the archetypes in different ways so that they fit the pattern that has enabled me to think of myself as the self that I now am, having chosen. A very complicated, nuanced undertaking, and one that's never really done.
Well, it seems to me that this summarization or this characterization in sort of as total as can be talked about at a given moment in one's evolution, that the Great Way represents, has some kind of like, it informs the next choice, right? It informs the next, or I shouldn't say next choice, the next level of the choice that we are either continuing to make, or we sort of arrest our path and maybe rock the other way, to use that rocking analogy that Ra used for transformation of mind.
Yeah. I'm pretty comfortable with your first formulation when you say the next choice, because the big choice is between service to self, service to others, obviously. And so that's the choice. But that's composed of a huge number of little choices.
Right.
And it's often not until one has made a little choice that actually goes against the grain of the big choice that one realizes that it actually does so.
Very much, yeah. So.
And so one's constantly having to suss out what it means to have chosen this or that or the other thing. I mean, that's a process that's constantly underway. And the balancing or the integrating of all of the choices at all of the different levels and becomes the name of the game. And these are not just choices that have an easy referent in our everyday experience. They're often choices with regard to things like, how do I feel about something? One normally experiences feelings as something that come to one, that happen to one, mm-hmm. without realizing that there's already a choice at work there in those feelings. And it's terribly subtle work to get down into the root structure of the feeling process from the standpoint of the choices they already represent.
Which gets to the whole paradox of choice in general, because is the choice a discovery of something latent in me as a individual mind-body-spirit complex, or is it a free will thing that I'm creating, right? It bounces back between this.
Yeah, that's right. There is a give and a take there, obviously. And it's a, in that give and a take, in that motion, there is then eventually developed a kind of a stable structure. The motions come to be recognized well enough that one doesn't need to be invested in the moving back and forth so much. One sees the whole motion as a whole. And,
yes.
And that's the first moment of the crystallization process.
Right.
A crystallized energy center is one in which these motions have been regularized and set in into a kind of hard structure that can sustain itself as the basis for moving higher up the ladder, moving on up. And so one doesn't have to go back and redo that once it's become crystallized. And the interesting thing is that the crystallization process is utterly unique with regard to each mind-body-spirit complex. And so yours is not the same as mine. And so while there are patterns there that one can recognize, each of us is responsible for the crystallized selfhood that we are establishing as who we are, as what we have become. And we carry that on up the chain. We carry that on up the chain in terms of our energy bodies, and we do that with regard to the archetypes that we have worked with as a part and parcel of that process.
Yeah, it's like the Great Way represents a wider band of the vibratory frequencies that we're discovering in smaller frequencies of all these different components.
True, it's wider band, but it can only be worked with from a much narrower band.
Exactly. Yes. I'm not finding a quote about this, so tell me if I'm wrong about this. When Don was discussing with Ra the evolution of the archetypal mind and the different ways in which the archetypes were kind of, well, we will choose, you know, this one will have three sets of three, this one will have, you know, a set of five or what have you. I remember there being something about when they talked about the Great Way and the transformation, that there was one logoic experiment where they added the Great Way to the first five. And then there was another logoic experiment where they added just transformation. There seems to be, like, obviously...
Yes, I remember that.
Obviously, yeah. I'll find the reference for the show notes. But obviously, like, there's something in there that also, I think, points to the function that was evolved for these different stations. Because...
Well, it would be possible to think that, for example, that... The whole name of the game is transformation,
right?
And once you've arrived at that point, you have substantially completed the movement through the archetypes,
right?
Or it would be possible to say that by the time that the transformation is so much part and parcel of everything that it doesn't need an archetype of its own. The comprehensive archetype would then be what we're now calling the Great Way. The interesting point is that in our current logos, there is seen to be a virtue in distinguishing between the transformation and the Great Way, those being two archetypes. So two places where one can rest and two places where we can have independent energy input into the system.
Right. I feel when you say a place to rest, I feel the image that comes to my mind is like we're sort of floating across this bar with notches in it. And each of these archetypes are like a notch we can sink into. Right. And then we lift up and we sink into another one. Yeah.
Or a place where you can put your foot.
Yeah. Footing. Yeah. Because the best way to realize these archetypes, for the adept at least, is to kind of have this pure resonance, this pure appreciation of the position in consciousness you are at a given moment.
Yeah.
And you resonate it deeply.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Which I still want to try to put that into effect instead of having it just... But I think that kind of stuff kind of happens to you. I don't think you choose to do it, really. Unless you're really, really adept and you have... You're picking these as a painter would from a palette, right? Like you're just...
I think once the dancer has become the dance, the mastery... is in place. And so at that point, you do choose. But for the most part, we find ourselves swept along by these things. And it's not until the choice is made that we really have a sense of the nature of the dance.
Right. And the dance never fully loses that mysterious component that can always come at us from sideways, even if we are quite adept, I would think.
Well, certainly within third density, I can't speak for sixth or seventh density in that regard.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
So, is there anything about the great way of mind and the great way of body in particular that you want to speak to? These are very, very different images.
The great way of body.
This is the whole Athanor alchemical.
Yeah, it's in the transformation of body, we've already seen the centrality of sacrifice.
Yep.
And when you're actually engaged in sacrificing the manifest, that can kind of fill up your whole firmament. It's a very riveting experience. When one thinks of the body as the Athanor, however, you know what an Athanor is. It's what the alchemist uses to...
the purifying oven.
Yeah, right. One is doing that with more deliberation. And so... One doesn't think of the sacrifice there so much as the sacrifice, so much as of a loss, as a process that one is initiating to specific ends. And so, so one is more the actor there than the acted upon.
Right, yeah.
In that regard. The body is the receptacle of that, but it's willingly done, and it's done with a specific purpose and with knowledge beforehand of what the outcome is expected to be. You couldn't say that about the transformation.
No, that is a complete throwing yourself off the cliff.
and the great way of mind is merely an awareness of the entire pattern of that the archetypes describe, the whole framework or structure of the archetypes, and a mastery of that pattern sufficient to enable one to make certain determinations. For example, the circumstance that I find myself in calls upon a consideration of the catalyst of mind or catalyst of body, or maybe it's the matrix of mind that would best be invoked for the moment that I am undergoing. So one has then a sense of the totality of the notes available for my tone poem. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just passing through this thing I call my life experience. I'm actually working that life experience to more conscious and specific effect.
Yeah. With Great Way of Mind, we have some items in the image that I'd like to call out. I may end up regretting it. So there's the veil on there that is lower on the left-hand side than the right hand. There are the sphinxes, which those of Ra have averred is a representation of time. And they have like two different interpretations of the bent arms on the sphinxes that I think it's one of those things where like two right answers can be right, you know, but they also mentioned something that I would never have picked up from just looking at this card on my own, which is that the chariot is not yoked to the sphinxes.
That's right.
I just today had an idea of what that might represent, which it might call to the future potential for our use of mind to be greatly, greatly, greatly focused and intensified in the higher densities. But at this point, we are just learning how to do that yoking.
Well, true. To the extent that it's not yoked, however, the suggestion is that one is not confined within the process. One has mastered the process, so one that there's a liberating sense to that. So, in other words, instead of finding myself in a position of working through the archetypal structure up to the point, say, for example, of the transformation, I am now able to step back and recognize without being caught up in the pattern of development which led me up to this point, mm-hmm. I'm able to step back and recognize all of the elements at play and to bring those in at the appropriate moment, at the appropriate time.
Yeah, that's a good one too. And it just seems like there must be something involved with time with that. Maybe I'm making it too complex. I think it's really just the idea of mind with a kind of dilated experience of itself that time allows, maybe. That it is the medium of transformation, and it's to a certain extent. Right.
Yeah. Now I do notice that there's a kind of a warrior like aspect to this.
Yeah.
The sword being there, and who knows if the sword was part of the original concept, but there's a sense that the danger lurks on the left hand side.
Right.
And, there's an atmosphere of vigilance suggested as that which is appropriate.
As an archetype that's supposed to be a kind of summarization or a characterization of the entire environment of mind, to use mm-hmm. Ra's, to paraphrase Ra, it's an incredibly dynamic image in a lot of ways.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about this image? I know we don't try to focus too much on the images, but in this case, we had a lot of time left.
No, I think that will serve.
Okay. For the Great Way of Body, I do notice there was one thing that stuck out to me this time, which was that those two wings on the figure there, mm-hmm. The left wing seems to be hiding the transmutation that pouring from one vessel into another, it seems to be hiding it from the sun. Whereas like the lower wing on the right hand side tends to make this transmutation that's going on that is represented by the body complex. It seems to like not try to obscure it, but maybe be a little bit more open about it. Any thoughts on that?
I don't sense the workings of polarity as much in this as I would have expected to. What you have suggested does go a certain way in that direction. The wing on the left-hand side is high. The wing on the right-hand side is lower. I struggle with that. I can't see why it would be that way.
Yeah.
The passage of a liquid from the left into the right, this suggests to me that there is an alchemical transformation that's happening in transferring the left to the right would suggest a positive path. So the whole arc.
Just another idea. Maybe we're the choice polarity here is getting us mixed up a bit. If you remember, in a lot of magical working, you absorb from the left hand and you radiate with the right hand.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So yes. This could be just a representation of how energy and manifestation actually works to the seeker's purpose, right?
That's right, and it suggests to me positivity. In fact, I would say that the great way of mind also suggests an overall positivity. So it almost appears as if the two archetypes that come after the significator, after the choice is made, are tilted towards the positive in the representation that's given here. I don't know what it would mean.
I think it just means that it's Ra's images, right?
Maybe so.
Yeah. This is just like, if Ra's going to paint a picture, they're not going to paint a picture. They're not going to paint Guernica, right? They're going to paint something by definition that has a little bit more tendency towards the positive.
What would the great way of mind or body look like if you're on the negative path? That's very hard for me to imagine. I mean, to some extent, the negative path is predicated on separation of self from self. And these two archetypes seem to presuppose an integration of self with self.
Right.
So maybe the archetypes, these two, are not ones that negativity can work with very well.
It is possible that when we speak of the path of that which is not, that the service, I mean, this is something that just occurred to me, that maybe the service of self seeker forges their own path through the archetypal mind in a lot of ways.
Well, I'm sure they would have to, and I can see how that could work up through the significator. But at least if these images are to be our guide, I don't see how they're working in the transformation and in the great way. Now one could have transformation. Ra does speak about how certain negative entities program entire incarnations, as they say, honing the fine...
A blunt edge of anger.
The blunt edge of anger or hate.
Yeah.
I could see that. And that would involve a kind of transformation. If we're to imagine then what the great way would be, it would be a substantial review of a process of evolution, which permitted one an exquisitely refined commitment in one's innermost desire,
yeah,
to serve the self.
The instead of the great way being this kind of like nostalgic look back and reflection on what one has learned in a given cycle, it would be more feel more like the conquering of the impediments of that cycle and the opening to the next level of combat, right?
Yeah, conquering is a good word there. Yeah.
The one flying...
I'm not so sure nostalgic is a good word for the positive.
But I knew you wouldn't like that.
Conquering for the negative is certainly... Yeah.
I have a limited vocabulary here, but transformation of mind has a significant element of negativity that the other archetypes, I think, don't really have, except maybe the matrix of spirit, and it has to do with this elemental figure pointing the arrow at the left hand path.
Well, yeah, that's. is that supposed to be, if it were not for the demonic character of the figure itself, I would have taken it to suggest that there is a protection on the right-hand path.
Yeah, I've thought that too. But they say exactly the opposite in the contact.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder...
So I suppose that all that we can ascribe to that is the sense that you need the protection on the left-hand path.
That maybe the fact that it's a fiery being implies some energetic component to this protection, maybe. That as one, for example, hones that blunt edge of anger over many lifetimes mm-hmm. and learns to armor oneself against the pains and the vulnerabilities that one, that is kind of the rock against which one is honing the blade, right?
Was it anger or was it hate? I seem to remember hate. Is that, did I get that wrong?
I don't know. I will make sure the
anger, show notes says, anger seems hot, but hate seems cold.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. Hate is sort of like a lot of anger being crystallized into a blade. That, yeah. I think you're right. So the idea being that it is the abandonment of the purity and the openness and love of the right-hand maiden that then gives one the ability, the experiences that teach one to block and deceive others. And maybe that is where the protection comes from. And when we use these words that imply or represent discrete actions that we would do in our lives, we're talking about the signifier, not the signified, right? We're talking about the expression and manifestation of this underlying energetic polarization that is occurring that then governs and sort of motivates all of these different things that we associate with negativity. This is something I'm always making this point when people are talking about polarity on like the forums or the subreddit, that we need to get down to the energetic basis of polarity. And that's where we're going to have the purest expressions of these things.
Yeah. And so just to sum up what we've concluded about the two paths, it seems that the protection is necessary on the negative path, but not necessary on the positive.
Yes, and maybe necessary isn't the right word on the positive path. It is actively sort of released.
Actively invoked, is that what you want to say?
No, active. Protection is a way of taking care of oneself, perhaps at the expense of others.
Yes.
The sacrifice of the positive path would all, to me, it implies an openness and saying like, I'm going to dare to love. Even though I know from long experience that it hurts.
Yes.
Right?
I'll go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say about transformation or great way?
Nope.
Okay. Do we want to, so next episode, we're going to be dealing with the spirit. Is there anything you want in light of what we've spoken about? Anything you want the listener to think about before we go into that episode?
Only the portentous music as we approach the dark night of the soul.
Ah, yes. Yes. I have beagles.
The matrix of spirit.
When I see that experience of the spirit card of the Howling Hounds, I just think of my two beagles. And when they get into sync on their harmonization of their baying.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think maybe we'll just leave it for next episode. We understand the complex of mind to a certain extent better than we did before. We understand the complex of body as its reflection a little bit better. And we've seen it through all these cycles. So now we can contrast what we've covered over the last two episodes to this new and most mysterious complex that constitutes us. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I think we will leave it there. Thank you so much for engaging in this conversation, Steve.
And thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks so much for listening. And in the meantime, until we return, stay in the love and light.